Welcome to the 20th episode of A Change the Chance. My name is Ryan Lowe, and it's my goal to educate as many people as possible by interviewing experts who can share their unique perspectives and inspire us to put our ideas into action and make a difference. First of all, I'm so excited to welcome everyone to the 20th episode of A Change the Chance. I cannot believe that we have come so far. This month is Asian American Heritage Month, and as a Taiwanese American, this month means a chance for the world to listen to our stories. Everyone needs to hear the Asian narrative, from schools to office jobs. So to commemorate the 20th episode of A Change of the Chance and AAPI Heritage Month, that's exactly what we'll be talking about today. So today, I bring the co-founder of Teach AAPI, an organization that creates a space where people who identify as AAPI can find a sense of belonging, confidence, and pride in themselves, and a better understanding of people who may look like them or share a similar background. To Teach AAPI, this sense of belonging and understanding is a critical tool to building self-advocacy skills in life. So, I welcome Ms. Renee Yang, an incredible person focused on driving systemic change in social equity. So, hello, Ms. Yang. How are you today?
Very good. How are you, Ryan?
I'm doing fine.
It's been a long day. It's been a long week. It's been a long year.
It's almost time for summer. So, as I mentioned earlier, May is Asian American Pacific Islander History Month. What does this month mean to you?
Well, as an AAPI community, I think we should actually have the freedom to celebrate our heritage, our history, our contributions loud and proud every single day.
Yeah, that makes
but
sense.
May is special in that we can leverage this opportunity to learn more and dive deeper into our respective cultures. And honestly, it gives us a chance to elevate some of the core issues that we still face as an AAPI community and to share us with the broader community.
Yeah. So what do you think schools or even the country should be doing to celebrate this month, as you were talking about?
Well, that's a really good question. To answer that, I want to share with you the mission of our organization, Teach AAPI. Our goal at TAP, for short, is to redefine what it means to be AAPI for future generations, like yourself, through the power of education. We are solely focused on children, and we're focused on early intervention through education. We believe that the biggest factor in fighting AAPI racism is through education, especially at an early age. In fact, one of the statistics that came out from a report called the Status Report, I wanted to share this with you, which measures perceptions of AAPI community across all of the United States by all Americans. So this is a general population survey. It noted that education is really the number one driver in allowing people to really change the ways and the views that they have against Asian Americans. So educating about our contributions to America, both past and present, is really critical, in our opinion, to changing the way that we are seen and appreciated. And it really shouldn't just happen during the AAPI History Month. The other thing that I wanna say is that connected with education, what's also really important is changing our narrative. Overall, the AAPI community is really seen as a monolith. So they see all of us as one and the same, right? And so it's really important for us as a community to share as many stories from as many lenses as possible. We are not the sum of a single story. And more than that, schools and medias in the country should really help to promote this, and the more that they do, the more that they can contribute to helping address racism and its deepest roots.
Yeah, are there any particular pieces of curriculum that are very important for you to share?
Yeah, I mean, it's really everything. You know, obviously, foundationally, the contributions of Asian American to America, right, to the founding of America is really important. And you would be surprised. It is really distilled down to a few big incidences. You know, you think about the railroad, you think about internment. Yeah, some of those, you know, it challenge and issues that Asian Americans face that is somewhat socialized in schools. But just this month, I learned about this incredible story of the Manila Men. So I don't know if you remember when you were in fifth grade and you learned about U.S. history, and you might have remembered the Jamestown settlement and how Europeans came to the U.S. and how they formed settlements and really sort of grew from there. Well, the Manila Men were actually Filipinos who came from, obviously, the Philippines, and they contributed greatly to the settlement of Jamestown. But that story has never really made it out into the open. People don't realize that Filipinos drove a lot of contributions in that space. In fact, they revolutionized refrigeration, which at that point in time was, you know, like, how do you keep fish and meat and cool? And all of that impact is lasting. You think about the South today, you think about the crawfish boils and people have and they're eating off of the table. A lot of that actually has some Filipino roots tied to it. So that's just an example of how important storytelling is, because otherwise you would have just assumed it was just Europeans that made America, America.
Exactly. And like in fifth grade, yeah, we learned about Jamestown. Why do you think that they wouldn't include stories about the Manila Men?
I mean, I think a lot of it is down to a few things. Sometimes people don't know the stories. I think a lot of our curriculum is just passed on year to year. There's not a lot of integrating new information. Teaching is very complex. It's a lot for a teacher to have to teach throughout the year. The teacher themselves have to learn and be trained to taught. And we all know the school systems, whether you're in private schools and public schools, it's fairly bureaucratic. Things don't move very fast. And so you need organizations like ours, whose really our job is to work and make sure that that important content gets out there and that students really learn and understand the contributions of AAPI in American history and beyond.
I can tell how passionate you are about this, but what about at the beginning? What inspired you to start Teach AAPI?
Yeah, so I co-founded Teach AAPI in May of last year. So this is a full year for us with my partner, Lynn Kono, who was a fellow parent at our children's school. There are specific reasons and why I think this cause is deeply personal to me. I was actually born in Hong Kong. So I myself am an immigrant. I didn't really grow up in AAPI. I grew up surrounded by people who look like me, who talk like me, culturally were just like me. So to be honest, when I moved here, I kind of took things for granted and I really didn't see the issues that existed. Really until the rise of the pandemic and the anti-Asian hate that really came alongside it. And as a mother now to two boys, and you know, you have heard my two boys, Dominic, who's 12, and Rylan's 9. I think you guys saw each other when you guys were young. I worry every day about the world that, you know, my kids are growing up with, from environmental issues, which I know you cover a lot in your podcast, to political divisiveness, to AAPI hate, and just yesterday, the school shootings in Texas, right? Yeah. My job as a parent is to protect and guide my kids. And it feels hard to do that when the world that we're living in is so unpredictable and so challenging. But I do feel like I have a unique vantage point in being able to play a more active role in the AAPI space and in helping my kids shape their identity. And I think the word that you use in self-advocacy, right? Rooted in this deep understanding that they have on their culture, I definitely want to make sure my kids have that when they're growing up. Dominic, too, faced some racism incidents at the start of COVID while we were in remote learning. He himself had to overcome. All of that has really fueled the fire in me to activate and drive change.
That's great. So you talked about how Teach AAPI is a rather new organization, 1 year. What are your main goals for the future? How large do you want to get?
Yeah, so to kind of tap back on our mission and sort of what we want to do, what our goals, Teach AAPI really was started with the children in mind. When you think of a lot of nonprofits out there in the AAPI space, and there has been actually quite a lot of new organization formed by innovative creators of all ages, all spaces, but a lot of them out there is focused on areas of violence, social inequity, economic injustice, some of those kind of areas. We are really uniquely focused on the future generation through education. And when I say children and education, I don't just mean AAPI children, I mean all children. For our children, for AAPI children like yourself, we know this work is really critical because it helps to shape the identity. It helps children connect deeply with their roots. It helps them build pride and confidence and have them learn to advocate for themselves. But to be honest, and selfishly speaking, that isn't just for AAPI kids. We actually see the power of our work through sharing AAPI stories beyond our community. Because by sharing stories beyond our community, what we're really doing is broadening perspectives. We are building connections and we're creating allyship moments that enable us to really drive long-lasting change.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to note how important representation can be on a child's life. Like, I really would have wanted to know about some of those major issues, like as a second or third grader. So have you found that people are generally supportive of your goals, and what have been the biggest obstacles so far?
Yeah, so I think in theory, we definitely have a lot of support for what we're working towards accomplishing at Teach AAPI, because frankly, it just makes a lot of sense. And then also, for right or wrong, there's just been too many incidents of violence tied to anti-Asian hate. It's honestly just impossible to ignore, even if you want to. For us, in our organization, the biggest obstacle isn't actually about fighting to include more AAPI curriculum into schools. While that's a challenge, that is not our biggest challenge. It's actually the fact that, one, a lot of the AAPI content that exists today is very much focused on, if it even exists, history. It's honestly more East Asian focused. And it caters to students more like yourself in the 7th to 12th grade. You know, a lot of the themes that get introduced for AAPI, if they do at all, really happens in middle school and high school. There isn't a lot available to younger children, maybe because they haven't found the right way to teach it. But for example, we just launched our Little Readers Book Club earlier this month with Benson Shum. I don't know if you've heard of someone called Mo Williams during the pandemic. He kind of did like sketching with kids sort of as he told stories during COVID on Zoom. He was one of the first writers and artists to do that. Well, Benson Shum's like that, but he's Chinese. And so we did a little book reader book club with him that was launched, and with sort of very little marketing dollars, we were able to get 1,500 kids to view this. We were able to get this viewed in 25 schools. 49% of those were public schools. And really what that tells me is there is interest and a need for this sort of innovative, earlier education content. And we're not sharing deep, dark, scary history with them. We're just trying to show them there are more faces to Asian American than, and the Asian Americans can do many different things. So I think that's one area that I think is a challenge that, you know, we are working to deliver against. The other part of it too is, even when there is some content available, the challenge is to get this content into students' hands. If you think about the school systems, there's private schools, there's public schools, there's charter schools. All of that happens at the city level, then the state level, and then the country level, right? And nobody talks to each other because that's not how it's set up. And so you have some really great things happening from an AAPI perspective at the very top, things like the Illinois Teach Act, which really is requiring AAPI education to be taught in schools in Illinois. And the same thing is happening in New Jersey. That's all wonderful. But content doesn't equal impact if it doesn't get into the hands of students. And so what we do at Teach AAPI is that we actually work with educators and storytellers to, one, take that interactive content and scale it so that it crosses geographic, legislative, and bureaucratic boundaries. It doesn't mean because I'm based in LA and our organization is based in LA that only LA people see this content. Anyone can access it, and I think that's really important. We also build the content out in such a way in partnership with the teachers to make sure it's easiest for them to use. So in California, there's something called the California Core Standards. That's, you know, how teachers teach by grade, what topics they teach, what area. We try to take our content and slide it into the core curriculum. So teachers already teaching something similar, they can just add on to it. And we try to format that content in a way that is literally like, here's a Google slide deck. Here are the discussion guides. Here are the videos. It doesn't take the teacher a whole lot of time and extra energy on their part to teach AAPI. And I think that's the intention, because teachers we know are busy enough, and especially in the last 2 years dealing with COVID, you know, I can't imagine how hard it is to be a teacher. And then finally, we as an organization have a network of really dedicated parent advocates and schools who are working with us to take that content and put it into their schools. And so that is something that allows the laws that are happening at the very top, the legislation happening, carry through all the way to students being able to be impacted by this AAPI content.
That's incredible. I really do believe that what you do is wonderful and very smart, honestly.
Thank you. We're learning, though. You know, we say we are a nonprofit, but in some ways, we're operating more like a startup. I feel like sometimes like I'm a little bit of an entrepreneur, which is really exciting because it gives us the opportunity to test and learn and iterate and improve, which is all something we should strive for, right? Because nothing's perfect.
Yeah. Well, you've done a great job.
Thank you, Ryan.
So you were saying something, you were talking earlier about the rise in anti-Asian hate. Mm-hmm. Unfounded myths and fears around Asian Americans have been around for decades, though. And as you're saying, especially the last 2 years. So what do you think needs to happen within the next 3 to 5 years to raise the profile of Asian Americans in the U.S. and ensure justice?
Yeah, I mean, that's the holy grail. And, you know, it needs to be done. And it's not going to come down to one perfect solution or one magic bullet. I really do believe that we need to fire on all cylinders. One area that is really important is, of course, in the theme of education today that we've been talking about, is speeding up the pace in which AAPI curriculum in schools are adopted. All schools nationwide, K to 12, needs to have this. It has to be a must. It cannot be a nice to have. You mentioned, Ryan, the importance of increasing representation. We believe that that's the second piece that is going to be really critical. Children need to see successful Asian Americans and AAPIs from all walks of life. It's something that we have to continue to strive for in corporations, in media, in schools. Kids need to be able to see the role models to understand that they can be anything they dream of and work towards. So representation does matter. And then finally, I would say it's about changing the way that Asian Americans are talked about. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about this idea of monolith or single story. This is an area where I think we really need help from the media, social media, news, and entertainment sector. We are not a single story. And until all Americans start understanding that, we will continue to be seen as the same. And that is exactly what we want to avoid.
Yeah, and like other times, people don't want to share our stories because of misperceptions about other things they've heard. So what are some of those biggest ones and how can we combat those?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked this question. So I don't know if you've heard the term, the, you know, model minority.
Yeah, of course.
Model minority is very much what Asian American is seen as. And that myth of the model minority is really an issue for us. Americans tend to see Asian Americans as nice, hardworking and compliant. And so you could be like, well, what's wrong with that? Like, how can that be a bad thing? Well, it's actually really, really harmful, this myth, because it limits our opportunities. It says, okay, you can be a good worker, but maybe you cannot be a good leader, right? It erases our differences. It's saying that everybody is essentially the same. We all know we are all very different than the core. And it creates that this misperception, I believe, that AAPIs don't want or need help. In fact, another statistic I'll throw at you, Asian American causes is one of the most underfunded causes in the United States. People don't donate to AAPI causes. I don't want to misquote it. I can't remember if it was 0.2% or 3%, but it was an extremely low figure. So while there is clear recognition that AAPIers are facing issues, the support and infrastructure is not there. And that is because the myth of the model minority makes people think that we don't need help. We're all successful. And that's simply not true. I mean, also, Asian Americans span a wide socioeconomic levels, right? Some people are very wealthy, some people are not. And I think that that needs to be sort of understood. One other thing that I learned recently, I don't know if you're familiar with an author called Paula Yu. If you're not, check her out sometime. She came to our school during May AAPI History Month to talk about the myth of the model minority. And the really harmful thing about this myth is that it doesn't just impact us as Asian Americans. It actually also pits people of color against each other.
Yeah.
It prevents different groups from working together as allies for the same causes. And it forces us to separate and fight instead of bringing us together. And I think that's really dangerous. So I hate to sound like a broken record, but at the end of the day, education is really one of the most important things I think we can do. People need to see and understand our differences, our whole selves. It is just as important to show our wins as AAPI as it is to show where our issues are and to share facts, right?
Yeah.
One example I'll leave you with is, so one of my Black friends reached out to me after the Paula Yu event at school. So Paula Yu did a parent event and then she did assemblies for the lower school and the upper school. And her daughter came home after the Paula Yu event and she was like, Mom, this was like easily the best assembly that I've ever been to, which was like, yay, I'm really happy because we brought her in. But she also said something that she didn't realize, which was that she didn't realize people who were not Black faced racism. And so to me, that tells me and shows me the power of education and multidimensional storytelling. Right? Had Paula Yu not gone in and spoken about this myth, has she not shown the full, you know, range of what Asian Americans are going through, not just the good stuff, but the bad stuff as well, this child would have never known, or maybe she might have known later on. But that's, to me, the power of education.
Exactly. The best way to fight misinformation is with education of the correct information. And going off the model minority myth, especially in lower grades, it tells other children that you're smart, that's how I'm going to think of you, which can be a very big burden. Like I've seen this in my elementary school years.
Exactly. That is so true.
So for anyone who supports the inclusion of AAPI culture and history in schools, what can they do and how can they help?
Well, and I think you would know this very well through all your advocacy work you do, but I think our power is in our voices. I would ask any parent or any child who feels that their school can benefit from AAPI education to reach out directly to us so we can help. Over the past year, we have built this network of strong parent advocates. We also, in 3 months, signed 11 pretty big schools, both in the public and private space in Los Angeles, as founding member schools. And you asked about our goals. Well, we plan to create chapters in cities across the country And our first step is really just having families and parents and kids who see an issue use their voices and advocate and reach out to us to support this effort.
Yeah. Well, I'll hop on that.
We can open a Northern California chapter.
That would be epic.
We need to. It's not we can't. We should, actually. We need to.
We can, one, at some point, span across the entire country.
Yes.
So that was my final question. Thank you so much for talking to me today. I've learned so much about what you do with an organization to the power of education. So together, let's continue sharing our stories with the world.
Really excited to do that, Ryan. I have been such a fan of yours and your activism. I have seen it in your parents' social media, and they've shared it, and they're so proud. I think it's incredible that all you're doing to use your voice to shine a light into all the issues that we face today. So thank you for giving me the platform to share a little bit about our organization, and thank you for being such a big part of the solution.
Well, thank you for your kind words, but also for always being there to support our communities.
Thank you.
So that's it for A Change at the Chance, episode 20. I hope you learned something, and I'll see you on the next episode. Bye.